All right, guys, we're gonna take some seats and we'll get going. We don't have we've got an hour, right?
No, 15 minutes.
We've got 1 hour. All right. Are we recording at the back of the room? Thank you kindly. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the joint session between the registrars and the registries. We've got the agenda up on the screen, update from NomCom, transfers, RA amendments, and then prep for the board. I would like to get through those first three relatively quickly because that prep for the board always takes a bit of time. And I want to make sure people are prepared for that, for the people who are going to put on the spot. Right. NomCom leadership. Who is doing this?
Saeed.
Wherever you can find a free chair and a mic.
Advanced light. Oh, it's working. Oh, I'm trying. Let's give it one more shot and see. No, advanced light. Okay, advanced light. Thank you very much. Hi, guys. I'm Zahid Jamil. I'm the chair of the NomCom this year. I'm joined by my associate chair, who was chair last year, Hans Peter Holland.
Introduce.
Okay. We have today, what we're doing is basically doing some outreach with different groups. We've been going on to literally everybody, like from the ASO, never had outreach from the NomCom ever. So, or apparently, at least not for the last 5 years. So we're going around basically getting our message out. And the first thing we're trying to do is basically ensure that folks know that the deadline for applying to slots the NomCom needs to fill, basically, is the 19th of March, which is in the next 7 days or so. Now, what are the seats we need to fill? I want to clarify. We have three ICANN board seats we will be filling this year. There are no geographic limitations on any of those three seats, so we would encourage you to apply. I have folks that you know or suggest, get them to apply. You have very limited time left, of course. Also on the deadline, let me just clarify that on the 19th is the deadline for expression of interest. You get access to your application, but you have a week to complete it by the 26th of March. So there's a little bit of leeway there. On the GNSO, we have a non-voting one seat that we need to fill. Some folks feel that when we spoke to candidates that why would I apply for the GNSO because they will not recommend me or I need to be part of the GNSO in some way. Actually, the answer is you don't need to be anything related with the GNSO. Don't worry about it. If you are or are not, it's not a qualifier or disqualifier. Excuse me. We have two seats on the ALAC, but they are geographically restricted, one for Europe, one for North America. Sorry, there was one last bit. CCNSO, can we go back? Thank you. And the two Cs for CCNSO, it's very important that we clarify, because we got into trouble last year, that we cannot fill anybody into those seats who happens to belong to, affiliated with, or is working in the CCTTLD in any way. So it has to be something completely separate or different. This is basically what it looked like last year. We did well on diversity. From 19% in 2016, we got applications up to 36% that were women. And so we're hoping to do better this year. And that was all because of the guy on my left here. He made that happen. Also, there were 29% candidates, women who filled seats in 2016. This year, or last year, 2017, we managed to get that ratio up to 50%. Let's look at what the board looks like and who's coming off on it. HP, do you want to take this?
Sure. So basically, if you look at the yellow frames here, you will see which candidates who have terms that ends on this at the end of this year. So NomCom is not replacing all of them, but Lito from Latin America and Lucevis from Europe, their terms are up. Of course, both of them can be renewed. George Sadowski, however, his term is also up, and he's served on 9 years on the boards. That's 3 terms, so he's term limited. So that's basically what the NOMCOM has to work on the board this year. So if you have good candidates, especially from Latin America and Asian Pacific and probably also Africa, depending on where the new CCNSO representative is coming from, that's where we're looking for. You look at a composition from North America, that's probably not the region that we need to find. So because NOMCOM has geographic restrictions, we can appoint a maximum 5 from one region, together with all the other appointments, and we need to make sure there is a minimum of 1 from each region.
Thank you. As you can see, that we never used to have 4 registrars, this will be pretty funny. We always used to have a link that said icann.org/nomcom2016 or 17 or 18 or 15 or 14. So for Google searches and people trying to find us, it became a nightmare. We have this year decided that we're going to have one basic, simple website address, nomcom.igann.org, and that'll be the permanent one, so it won't change. SEO will work well for us, hopefully, because of that. As you can see, the dates are up there, 19th of March deadline, 26th is when you have to complete your application by and get your references in as they roll in. If you think you want to suggest a candidate, you can do that too. Speak to us. If you want someone to be sort of, you know, mentored through the process, speak to us. We're open to talking to him. Just because we're going to be selecting does not mean we don't want to sort of encourage folks to apply. So if you want to come and talk to us, feel free to do so. And basically, in Panama, in June, we'll be making our final selections. But between this stage, which closes basically on the 19th of March, and in June, you'd be surprised to know, ordinarily, we've never met face-to-face. We've been using sort of, you know, online calls, et cetera, to basically do our work, which is where we do our selections. And that's important because we're coming to some improvements we're trying to do or have done this year. So with great responsibility comes absolutely no power to the NOMCOM. NOMCOM's destiny is predetermined before its birth, so we believe in God and fate. We can't change ours. And that's Groundhog Day, because literally every single year we aren't able to change any of this stuff. Let me explain what we mean by that. The recruitment firm, we have an option. Either we hire them or we don't, because there's no other options. That's what we're faced with when we come into existence every AGM. Our budget was never known to us. We had no idea, no feasibility into it. The assessment firm was, again, a binary option of either you get this one or you don't get anybody. Our schedule, our meetings, our operational planning were not up to us, and staff used to basically set our budget into, you know, stone 11 months before we were birthed. So basically when we used to come in, we got told, this is what you can do, and this, you know, there's not much else. We try to change that, and I got to say, you know, we have Tom Barrett here, who's also on the review team and did a lot of work in the previous year's recommendations. And so what we're about to show you is not what we came up with this year, but is built on sort of recommendations and experiences that Hans-Peter Holen in his year and Stefan Gungelder when he was chairing, and Tom Barrett when he did the recommendations, did a lot of work on trying to get this evolution to take place. So here we go. We were able to implement a decision on the first day we came into existence. We were prepped a lot beforehand so that we didn't waste weeks, etc. So staff got all instructions on day one. We forced a partial budget reveal, so we got to know what our numbers were on certain vendors and how much they got paid and what we could do and how much money there was to move around, which was not easy because apparently you can have a budget, but if you want to move it around, it's a whole process and it can't be done easily. We did manage to convince ICANN that we needed a second recruitment firm, which we have gotten from them, and we want to thank ICANN staff for that. We changed our assessment firm. We now have decided, this is probably the biggest change, that instead of doing just online calls or online ratings where people click buttons and give numbers, we are going to select board members by looking at every single application face-to-face, by meeting face-to-face and considering those applications. And this is something we would like to, you know, thank staff for the enormous work they've done to help us make that happen. We've, for the first time, got a job description, and we've asked the board to vet it, so that was not there before. So now we have a job description of what it means to be a board member, vetted by the board itself. And we have criteria. We're not just going to wing it when we go into the interviewing process by saying, let's, you know, see what we, where we get to. We actually have specific, not just guidance, which you get every year from the board, but quality and scales we've come up with in the last 4 months in our subcommittees, along with the job description. And as I said earlier, we're going to do in-depth face-to-face meetings for deliberations in order to select candidates and be more deliberative. And that is a big thing for us because it took a lot of effort to try and get approval to move our money around to be able to do that. Again, zero extra money for that. doubling the recruitment capacity, and on the long-term basis, we are now doing an RFP this year, so we have options beyond just two. So next year, Damon, who's on my right, is going to be the chair-elect, is going to have a list of people he can choose from about who's going to be the recruitment firm or the assessment firm. Now, the biggest criticism we used to get in the NOMCOM was it's a black box. I apply, then I don't know what happens. I never hear back from them. No idea what they're doing. And so what we've done this year is make sure that there's greater transparency in communicating with candidates. And at every stage when you are not selected, you will receive an email letting you know that thank you for your application. You are not going to go through the next stage, so you don't need to plan and keep sitting and waiting for maybe you'll be invited to an interview in Panama, but you'll be given that information. And that was one of the greatest criticisms. We've improved that this year. And we want to know our customers. So we want to know when we're appointing people to the GNSO, we want to know what it is to be in the GNSO. So folks from the ALAC or folks from the CCNSO who may not know what the GNSO is or how it works, they got specific training. We also got specific training thanks to Damon on my right here on interview training. He got a really good firm to give it to us yesterday. There was confidentiality training, board governance training. So we're trying to basically make sure that we understand how boards work. And we had a problem last year. We discovered that every time you select somebody in ICANN, you need to send it to legal so that they can do due diligence, which makes sense. The only problem was when you met at our last meeting last year, suddenly imagine that there is somebody who doesn't pass due diligence, what do you do then? Do we meet again? We can't. We're not going to meet for another meeting. We have a deadline. And so we've changed that process and streamlined it to make sure that we do due diligence before our candidates arrive. For instance, in this case, the Panama meeting. So when we select, that selection is done. It's not subject to due diligence. It's a final firm selection. And of course, as you know, the website is now solidnoncom.icann.org. We also have asked for guidance. We have not received guidance from the GNSO. So we sent a letter out to the chair of every ACSO asking them for that, but we haven't got guidance yet. So if there's anything you can do to help with that, or if you want to write us a letter saying what the registries think should be the kind of people we appoint to any one of these positions, you're free to do so. Please send that. It'll be helpful. Last biggest change, which is getting a lot of press or not in the community, is that we've basically become law-abiding this year, and we're applying our bylaws strictly, which means that term unlimited, non-voting liaisons don't get to vote or make outcome determinative decisions this year. And so they will be part of the participation, the deliberation, suggesting anything, recommending anything, also a part of straw polling. That will also be something they'll continue to do. But when it comes to a vote where a person moves from stage one to two or then to three, that will be done after the straw polling only by voting delegates in the NOMCOM. And that's my presentation. Sorry, I may have gone over time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There's someone in the chat, and I've got Stefan first, I think.
Stefan van Gelder, thanks, guys, for coming in and an impressive amount of work that's been going on already in preparing for the real work that now will start at the end of March for you guys. Just a couple of things on the, I don't know if we can go back to the board map that you had, but Hans Petter mentioned the CCNSO seat. That, as far as I know, has already been selected, so Mike will be replaced by Nigel Roberts, who's from Europe, so you can update your map with that if you need to. On the improvements that you mentioned, the web address situation, nomcom.icann.org was always there, but it previously pointed to a main page, which then pointed to each specific page. So just to clarify that the improvement you've made there is to have that address point directly to the active NOMCOM of that term. On the you had a slide on the voting, non-voting members. I don't know where that was. Just to clarify that the non-voting liaisons will continue to participate in the process. So it's not an exclusion, it's an improvement on past misunderstandings. Thanks very much, guys.
So just to add to that one, since I was chair last year, I will be very careful with saying that we did something wrong last year or previous years in the voting, non-voting things. My observation from being on the NOMCOM for 5 years is that we've become more and more driven to make decisions in the process. The first year I joined, the rhetoric was that the NOMCOM could bring back anybody from previous phases at any point. But then we've developed a process to bring us forward to say that, okay, we reduced the pool of applicants from 100 to 50 to 20 and to the final selections. And these are, in fact, becoming more and more decisions that determine the outcome. And when then talking to previous NOMCOM members and board members like Ram Mohan, it was quite clear that straw polling, as they do in the board, where non-voting members take part, is something that you do before you do a final vote. And then a final vote is not only the final vote at the end, but all the decisions that excludes people from moving ahead. So this is kind of a result of several things being changed in the process over years in order to make the process more efficient. So I think it's the right thing to do. I would also point to Saheed's intervention in the public forum yesterday, where he said that, well, it's really difficult to have two classes of people on the NOMCOM. So we would really encourage the board to look at changing the bylaws so that we have term-limited voting members from both ESSAC and ARSAC. Now, that may have some other consequences, but I think that's the right place to fix it if somebody thinks that it's wrong to treat people different. So, and it also was a comment from the ARSAC representative in our meeting with them earlier today that he was really surprised that he got to poll when he joined the NOMCOM 2 years ago. So I think sort of getting this on the table and now placing it where it belongs in the review and with the board to change the bylaws or clarify the bylaws, that's the right place to do it so there is no confusion in the future.
Thanks, Hans-Petter. Just a quick follow-up on the due diligence. The fact that before due diligence was only done on successful candidates, also for a cost issue. So if you're doing it on the final slate, does that mean that you are increasing the cost of due diligence?
So you're right. It does increase the cost of due diligence, but does not increase the cost of our overall budget.
I had a question from Chris Pelling on the chat, which he was asking if any of the people nominated either on the board or I guess GNSO or people coming through the NOMCOM have disabilities. He's interested in making sure I think ICANN accommodates people with disabilities, and he's curious about that.
So we haven't had anybody in the few years that we've actually been on who's actually identified themselves as having a special disability or needing special needs. But we are not actually sort of, in a sense, actively looking for that, but that's an interesting point. We will take that back to our NOMCOM. So thanks for making it. However, we try to make sure that that does not become an obstruction to anybody applying at all in any way. Sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah, I just want to stress here that the only hard limits we have in the bylaws are the geographic diversity. We're striving for equality on gender and other topics, but that's not a qualification criteria. We're looking for the best people for these positions, disabilities or not. That's not the criteria that we're looking at. And we're probably not allowed to use that criteria under laws in most countries anyway.
But, you know, again, it's just important to stress, it's not a obstruction.
Great. All right. Okay, we have a couple more questions. I want to keep this really brief because we need to talk about other things between now and I think we've only got another 20 minutes or so.
I just want to announce that I'm the rep from the registries and Theo's the rep from the registrars. If you have any questions or issues, bring them to us and we'll bring them to leadership. And thanks for coming.
And can I just say that your reps have actually been extremely helpful in certain processes we can't talk about, which are crucial to our working internally in the last 4 months. Thank you.
Thank you. Did I see one more, Tom, real quick?
Yeah, real quick. You guys have made a lot of progress, which is fantastic. I know you're getting into your busy period coming up to the Panama meeting, but it strikes me as the Panama meeting might be a great time to make sure we can continue the progress you've made into the next year. So we need to probably get it on the radar of the board, the BGC. So I definitely want to work with you on that as well.
And Tom, you will remember that the largest set of recommendations we've ever had was when you worked on this stuff. So thank you for all the work you did that helped us make this happen. And we look forward to working with you because you're on the review team to find a way to make sure that whatever recommendations or whatever comes out of the review actually does get implemented. So let us know how we can help. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. What is next on our agenda? Where do I have that handy? Domain transfers after GDPR. Great. So joint tech ops wrote a letter, have sent that to staff. It has not been published yet, as far as I know. It proposes a model for how transfers are going to work post-GDPR. It's not perfect. It has its risks. I don't think anyone is in love with it. And I think that's, in a sense, good because it still provides impetus for us to blow up and fix transfers as a whole. And we talked about this inside the registrars earlier today so that we can survive post-GDPR but still get some work done to fix them in a larger sense. I don't know if we have anything for the registries on this. If people have more to add, James is at the mic. James, please.
Thanks, James, with just a very quick question. Can someone give me a 30-second overview, having not read the letter yet, 30-second overview of why they believe the existing transfer process is not compliant with GDPR?
I think it's not that it's not compliant. It's that there's no public email address to shuffle
okay.
stuff around.
So it's not as simple an answer as I've always assumed that registrars would have a purpose to get behind the gated public Whois and that would work, and we would use like Radar or some other ICANN service and IANA IDs or something for that.
Someone from tech
okay, I just don't. I want to make sure we're not making this super hard and putting like a whole bunch of work in between us and May 25th. I mean, there already is, but more.
Tobias speaking. So James, the thing is with Radar, you mentioned the thing is that. All registrars should provide their IP addresses. And the thing is that most of the registrars are not providing their IP addresses or keep them updated. Another thing is there is no possibility for registrars to know when another registrar updated their IP addresses. So this process might look interesting, but it's not actually practically working.
Yeah, understood. And can we take this opportunity to say, registrars, please go to Radar and update your IP addresses using standard notation. And also, please check it regularly. That's going to have to be a good practice going forward. If folks are just kind of, because I mean, we see so many of them, folks will say, well, I can't get in, and it'll say null in their Radar whitelist. So we check it. I don't know, Jody. I don't know how we check it irregularly, let's say, but we're probably trying to get better at that and ask others to follow suit.
Thanks, James. Good note for people in the room. Anybody else have thoughts or questions on transfers? We need to begin socializing this with the rest of the community. We need to get ICANN to bloody publish the thing so that anyone knows it exists. Looking at staff in the room, go poke some people.
McKay, for the record, I just emailed ICANN's current head of communications about that to see if I can get an update. I emailed Duncan Burns to see if I can get an update.
Thank you. All right, moving on from that to RRA amendments. This was brought up in our earlier session. I think we've actually talked about, and I'm talking real quick. Apologies to non-English speakers in the room or non-native English speakers in the room because I want to make sure we've got time for other stuff. RRA amendments, there are going to need to be an awful lot of them post-GDPR, as all of you registries are going to need to incorporate language to address the GDPR. For better or worse, the policy has registrars in that workflow of approving these RRA amendments. We are terrified that we're going to see 1,100 of them on the 20th of May, and we can't possibly get through that many. You know, even the big registrars with a couple lawyers on staff aren't going to be able to cope with that. And so I think we sort of bounced some ideas around. There were two. The sort of biggest one was that perhaps there is some boilerplate language that we can work on, that so long as the RRA amendment includes only that boilerplate language change, then they can be essentially auto-approved. Any deviation from that means it's not, and it sits at the, we basically reject it until after May, or it goes to the back of the line where we can actually look at it substantively because we're just not going to have time. Jeff Newman, who I don't see, maybe still in the room, is he hiding over there, was hypothesizing a mechanism where we could put something in the RRA and then RAA, and then reference that inside the contracts. But no one wants to stomach opening that up either. So we don't have a ton of time for a super robust discussion about this, but that's kind of what we're thinking. We can take a couple questions, and or you guys can take that back and mull on it a little bit, and we can have some more discussions in our respective houses and bring that back to our leadership. And if anybody else has suggestions for how we might proceed around those, getting through those RRA amendments, I'm super interested in hearing them. Thoughts from anyone around the table? No, you love it. Everyone is at least terrified by this idea as well, and thinks that boilerplate language might work. I saw a hand from Beth.
I actually like the idea, but I could ask because we have the same terror of we have to send out changes and to 700 registrars, and it's not pretty on either end. But I was thinking, because not every registry and every registrar looks the same from a business model perspective, perhaps we could consider breaking that boilerplate language up into, boilerplate A, B, and C, and then you could say this amendment will include A and B, and then maybe not C, and make it really easy, a little more flexible, so you don't have a pile, just in case there is some variation. Not all, but some. So maybe we can just think about that. But I like the approach.
Sure. We can work out those details. We need to work out those details 6 months ago. today minus six. I think we can work on that. Anybody else have thoughts on RRA amendments before we start prepping for the board?
Thanks, Grant. Paul, for the record. Just to underscore the importance, if you mull this over or have to go back and talk to other colleagues back home, this is another priority, or a genuine sense of urgency. We don't have a lot of time to sort this out. This is not something to be, we'll deal with it at the summit in mid-May. That's just simply too late. By the time everybody's done traveling from this and when we realistically have to figure out what those A, B, and C boilerplate options look like, we've got a month, 5 weeks maximum. So please, treat it with the sense of urgency it deserves, and we can pick these discussions up on our lists, and then the XCOMs, can work together to find consensus compromise.
Thanks, Paul. Preparation for the CPH meeting with the board. We have that coming up. I think we have some topics. I think most of them came from the registries. So I might punt over to you, Paul. Do we have those, Zoe? Do we have those on a slide? Are they further down this sheet of paper?
Yeah, Zoe or Sue, because I can't remember them all top of my head.
So one of the ones that I don't think is on here, but I would like to address with the board, is going to be around fixing these joint meetings with the board. We were talking about this with the registrars. Most of us don't enjoy these interactions. It's really hard to get engagement with the entire board. We end up with a lot of people on their laptops not paying attention, or they have no expertise on an issue. And it's frustrating, and I think we all want to figure out a better way to do these things. And so I think we can put that to the board to see if they have not just questions for us, but a mechanism for interacting with us that they think might be more conducive to having better, broader discussion. As we also think about this, Michele?
Yeah, thanks, Graham. Yeah, this is something that came up, sorry, Michele, for the record. This came up as well with the when the board met with the GNSO Council at the weekend, for those of you who might not have been around. And I think over the years they've tried different ways of interacting with different groups. And, you know, they don't like the current setup. They've told us they don't like it. And I pity Graham chairing it because, but at least, you know, at least they won't snore loudly or anything.
Thanks, McKay. Do we find the other list? I think I have it. I can read it from my, I have it in Skype somewhere. Right. So discuss the budget and the reluctance to turn any of the excess application fees. I think this is around the TMCH double dip. Does someone on the registry side want to tackle that one in personally?
Yeah, I'm prepared to introduce it. I've got colleagues that will jump in. Just to let everybody know, we've been working behind the scenes in the weeks leading up to this with staff, with board members, et cetera. This will not come as a surprise to them. And I am cautiously optimistic, given the feedback I've received to date, that they are willing to finally listen to us and come to some sort of solution. So we can lead with that one simply because it should be quick and hopefully a positive path forward. If you can all see now, so next thought around budget, you know, putting pressure on better use of ICANN's existing budget as well as the reserve replenishment without taxing us. Folks probably saw coming into Puerto Rico that the a document was published by ICANN, had a number of ways that we could consider. The community could consider finding ways to replenish the reserve fund. One of them was new fees on contracted parties. In no uncertain terms, Yoron said that is there just to be comprehensive, but the staff is not in a position to, is not prepared to recommend that at all. So that's important for us. No more fees, but you know, we'd like to get some directors' perspectives on spending priorities and how they might go about the reserve fund. Certainly a possibility on the latter is raiding the big piggy bank, piggy banks, plural, either the excess application fees and or the auction fees funds. And, you know, both are kind of fraught with challenges. We can introduce that, and I would look to Jonathan perhaps to help us just because he's our lead in paying most attention to budget stuff. It's just to begin the conversation. Welcome everybody to jump in. Don't necessarily want to make it a huge debate on the budget alone and all the details, the line items, but we're just trying to, you know, make the point that as contracted parties consistently frustrated with the way ICANN is managing the resources has available. Jonathan?
So, Paul, I wouldn't mind some input here, and people just think for a couple of minutes about, it's Jonathan for the record, just about what specific questions we'd like. I mean, one that's come up earlier for us is this refrain that says 85% of the budget is essentially somehow cast in stone or fixed, and only there's only room to move with around 15%. So I think that's one question we'd like some more expansion on. But to the sort of overarching intro points from Graham and McKaylee and co, how do we make this a little bit more dynamic? Because this is a perfect topic to throw in a couple of questions rather than me just say, look, you saw the public comment we wrote on the budget. I think it's much more about trying to talk to them about financial thinking. So if anyone's got any specific thoughts or ideas that we can discuss, that would be great.
James, you have thoughts? Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Thanks, Jonathan. And we submitted our comment on the budget as well. I think it aligns very closely to those of the registries. We're also in the process, or will be, once we get out of Puerto Rico, and drafting our comment on the reserve strategy. I think that, and this came up earlier in our session, I think that we're being given some false choices. And I think some, to Jonathan's point, some of the more pointed questions we can ask is, you know, if you're talking about raiding these various funds or raising transaction fees, then you haven't, and you have this objective to replenish your reserve fund, then you have not sufficiently cut expenses because you need to allow for a surplus. So spending every dime that you take in funds is, you know, is not congruent with your desire to replenish your fund. I think the next question would be why the reserve fund is set against 1 year of the full budget and not the caretaker budget. It might be, I think, more contextually appropriate if you're living off the reserve to drop down to the caretaker budget as opposed to keep all the bells and whistles running and all the different programs operating. And I think the third one is just this general, when it comes to the budget, and Jonathan's point about just presenting a more financially, raising the financial awareness of ICANN is to have, you know, developing the budget is a community exercise, but the funding aspect of the budget really should be in close consultation with the folks in this room and talking about our projections for the upcoming year and what we see as overall trends in the industry and maybe some things that were one-offs in previous budgets that seem to be finding their way in multiple years. So those would be just my thoughts or comments, I think they were included in both of our comments, be happy to speak to those as well when we're with the board. Thanks.
Right. Thank you, James. That sounds like you and Jonathan are on the hook for tackling this guy. Keith?
Okay. Thank you, Graham, and thanks, James. I do have a follow-up question to what James just said about, you know, sort of the, I think, expectation setting as it relates to the market in terms of projections and, you know, what people anticipate coming in terms of domain name registration volumes over the course of a future year or years. I did get an email from a board member in the last couple of weeks sort of asking, hey, you know, Keith, do you guys have any resources that you could point me to, either something that VeriSign produced or some, you know, third-party market analysis about the, you know, sort of the marketplace? Because I think they're struggling with the same thing, either at the staff level or at the board level, certainly, not having that visibility. So it's sort of an open question. Are there resources that we could point them to? Are there resources they should have, you know, in terms of reports? And, you know, trend lines and things like that. And I think we just need to think through that a little bit before we just say, well, you should have a better understanding of what the marketplace is going to be over the next year, because I don't think it's really that obvious to them.
Yeah, Keith, I agree. And I think that one of the things we've said and that we mentioned in our comment is that that they should work with us on that, and that we would help provide them with the data that we could share. Now, some of this, I think, for public registries and registrars gets into a little bit of trouble, as Ben pointed out in our comment. You know, if we're saying something in our earnings calls or on our public statements, and ICANN is saying, you know, they're expecting 4% growth, then the question comes back to us is, why aren't you hitting the 4% growth that ICANN is foreseeing for the industry? So we have to be very, very careful about making those kinds of public public statements. We have to make sure that they're singing the same tune that we are.
Yeah, and I might, this is Paul, for the record, might add, there's an ad hoc mechanism to do this now. Safia and his team invite folks from across the community at the AGM meeting, the fall meeting, to kind of go over. They've got a tool. They use a model to project whatever it spits out. They ask, what do you think? In past years, optimistic numbers, we've been able to say, whoa, you might want to temper that a bit. And they have, and that's what we would then see in the subsequent budget. This year, you know, for a variety of reasons, schedule conflicts and whatnot, I don't believe they got registry or registrar inputs. I know I wasn't able to attend the Abu Dhabi session. And so we find ourselves in this situation where they publish something, we now comment on it. I guess the key takeaway is I think ICANN needs to come up with a more formal way to share those inputs, fully taking on board what James is saying, recognizing publicly traded companies in particular have certain requirements. But, you know, there can be a more collaborative nature to all this, and it just needs to be part of the formal scheduling and process. All right. So I think the budget will probably go.
Yeah, sorry, just quite briefly, Michaela here. For the registrars, we've been circling a drain in the proxy privacy IRT, and one of the areas which is contentious for some of us, or a number of us, or quite a lot of us, I'm not sure what the exact number is, but it's not something that a lot of us are happy with, is that ICANN wants to charge an initial accreditation / setup fee to become accredited as a proxy privacy provider, and then an annual fee for that. From what I've been able to tell, the economic rationale behind this is a little bit ropey. It's not as if they're going to be doing anything that they aren't already doing, or adding a higher staff headcount. And I think some people pressed them on this the other day and didn't really get anywhere. So the question, I suppose, really is, you know, are they trying to come up with new ways of taxing us indirectly in order to replenish their coffers, while they continue to spend money on projects for which they have absolutely no measurements, and which aren't related directly to the mission?
Okay, thank you. So going through, and I've gotten a heads up that the wording on this next one about IGO identifiers, this is old language. I'm hoping that staff received, there were additional tweaks, right? Okay. But ultimately, the issue is still one that we want to bring before the board, because it directly involves them. This special amendment expired quite some time ago. And there are several registry operators that have been working with non-governments or IGOs that you know, supposedly the reserve list was there to protect, and we're in this, you know, purgatory stage again. They can't register the names for those IGOs because ICANN has not updated or asked the board to clarify its position. We discussed this somewhat briefly in a session with GDD staff this morning, not really clear what staff's position was, other than they seem to say, well, bring it up with the board and take it from there. So we'll do so, keep the pressure up. And with IGO, John, are you on the hook to intro? Thank you. John will introduce it for us, and others, please feel free to jump in. And obviously, with any of these, the folks we identify, it's just to introduce the issue. Everybody's welcome to pile on. And I don't know, assuming we can get to the fourth bullet, you know, the last one. Sorry? Yeah. The fourth bullet here. I'm not going to read the whole thing out for you. It's, you know, just getting to the idea of what exists now, what could be called a regulatory framework, are the ways to sort of lighten the regulatory burdens with a specific view to making it participation more attractive to folks coming out of developing markets. And Rubens, I know you came up with the idea, so did I capture the idea, the essence of it all?
Yes, it does. I think it becomes lengthy due to explaining what regulatory framework is. So we should probably just read regulatory framework towards a more lightweight, and if someone wants to know what that means, that it's explained in the text.
Okay. Sam?
Thanks, Paul. This is Sam. I'm actually going to make a request to not dive into this today. And I hate to always bring us back to GDPR, but we have a lot of really immediate concerns around the regulatory framework and how that's going to change in light of GDPR, and ICANN doesn't have answers for us at this point as to how agreements may have to change, if there are going to be supplementary agreements or processes put in place. And I just don't think it's a good use of time today to go down this path. I think it's a worthwhile topic for future discussions, but there are more immediate pressing concerns.
How do folks feel about that? And if we have the time, what specifics will we raise? How do we prioritize all of our, amongst the long list of concerns about GDPR, which ones do we put forward, knowing also that this is going to, quote unquote, be, you know, new to the board, because they've received all this stuff about a month ago. Whether or not they really looked at it and prepared answers is another question. But you know, I think usually we kind of flippantly say we're sick and tired of talking about GDPR. Let's talk about something else. but fully take on board what you're saying. It's just critical. And this is our only opportunity face-to-face with the board, as collectively, as the stakeholder groups. So if we drop four and shift to it, you know, what do folks think? What would be the very top things to raise with the board that we might be able to have a discussion and not just, okay, we say it, they nod their heads, and nothing really changes? Any thoughts? Beth?
Sam, I agree. I think it's a very worthwhile conversation to have, but I do think that the more pressing need is to cover those things for GDPR. And I don't think it's super difficult to identify the things that are missing. We can point to the cookbook and rule them. The first thing, can we stop calling it the cookbook? That's the first thing I'd like to change. It's the worst name. And then second, just look through there. I mean, they continue to promise the waiver, the agreement, the amendment. They don't even use the same terminology as to what, how they're going to implement and operationalize the changes and the policies in the cookbook. So quite frankly, if they could we could just simply ask, what can we anticipate from you and when with regards to the implementing this in the RA, RRA, and other data escrow, other associated agreements? Thanks.
Sam?
Yeah, and this is Sam again, thanks. Maybe it's simply putting the question to the board of, as it relates specifically to the regulatory framework, have there been conversations up at your level? Is there board action that's anticipated? You know, there are options, right, that involves the board taking action on this. What kinds of conversations are happening? What can you share with us? Can you give us any indication of what direction this is heading in as we start to prepare?
Sounds great. Think you can say that again in about an hour's time?
If I remember it.
Okay. All right, so as time permits, introduce it. Sounds great the way you just phrased it, and we'll see where it takes us. As you noted, Grant, I mean, most of these, or at least two of these, are very specific registry-type things. We don't want to hog up the schedule.
No, I think that's fine. I think collectively, we if we get there, we can talk about structuring these interactions. Aside from perhaps what Michele was talking about, we don't. Nothing was coming out of the SG today, so. Oh yeah, we might bring up our stupid non-existent portal again.
Okay, so just to explain what we're talking about there, we got an update this morning from Chris Gift and ICANN staff on the portal. You know, the thing you guys have that we don't have, even though we pay and you pay and everybody pays, but you get more stuff than we do. Come on, you do. We can continue that conversation afterwards. So they put forward a timeline with different phases and everything else, and they're adding another, was it 3 years? It's about adding another 3 years to the timeline, which is already 4.5 years behind. And when we push them a little bit on the timeline, it transpires that there are no human resources assigned to the project. They have 3 people working on it, which we thought was a little bit strange. So this is something that needs to come from further up the rungs, potentially.
Yeah, I think we have probably, I think registrars are collectively super annoyed at this. But probably some of the rest of this is more important, especially around that GDPR conversation and the budget. So if we get there, we can hit it. We got 5 more minutes. I think we've covered the meeting with the board. We've got some people tagged to talk about some stuff. So that relieves me because I. GDD Summit is coming up. We were talking briefly about making sure that we have resources responsible for topics. We've got subject matter experts who are going to lead that. So everybody from both registrars and registries who are involved in the GDD Summit, let's make sure that we're looking at what is still left to be done and engaging on that. Both Paul and I had a semi-miserable time last year trying to chair that thing spontaneously and where agendas disappeared. There's been a lot of pressure on us to make sure this thing works this year, and really that pressure is on all of you to participate in making that agenda to drive those topics that we want to talk about and get the value out of it to make it worthwhile to travel to beautiful Vancouver in May. So let's make sure that we're all still doing that. Registrars, while I'm still chatting, don't forget that we've invited public safety for a drink at like 6 or something, 6:30 on the terrace. Not for you, registries, ha, ha, ha.
Oh, I might just quickly say, so 5 o'clock we have it's the compliance outreach for registrars. That's at 5, then finishing 6:15, and then 6:30 we have the drinks with the registrars have the drinks with the public safety working group.
Yeah, we gave you drinks last time. No, and so, yeah, it's upstairs on the 3rd floor terrace, I think. Do we have? Do you guys have anything for us in 4 minutes? I don't. I think we've already discussed everything we had for you, Zoe.
I don't know if you saw my chat in Skype. I don't know if that's important.
Chat in Skype. How mysterious. Maybe that's an interesting question. NTIA was we had quite a spicy meeting with the NTIA yesterday, registrars, and they were really pushing for us to ask either ICANN or the DPAs directly for forbearance on GDPR. Our uniform response was pretty like, that ship has sailed as far as we know. Everything has been signaled that that's not coming. We don't know if that hurts or hinders at this point. I'm curious if you guys got that heat too, and if anybody had other strong opinions on going down that road. I see James at the mic. James, you've got 30 seconds.
30 seconds would be, I don't see any harm, and although we're not likely to get any answers, if we could even crank a quick turn on a letter, at least take away that talking point. It was the same thing when we were being told that we weren't sufficiently reaching out to other folks in the community to talk about things. We did that. Not a lot came out of that, but at least no one is accusing us of that anymore. So it doesn't seem like there's a lot of harm in just cranking out letters like, hey, can we have another year? I'm not going to get it, but at least we asked.
Great. Okay, so I see 2:58. We've got to be at 3:15. We need to be upstairs in which room? Ballroom A? Ballroom A, 15 minutes. And so with that, I think we can close this session. Thank you, registries, for joining us today. Thank you, registrars, for all your time. We'll see you upstairs while Zoe's waving her hand yet again.
Sorry, there's one more question in the chat.
Oh, it's too late for the question in the chat. I will look very quickly. Best data. Oh, it's a market trend. I think we've moved on. Sorry, Joyce. We'll try and come back to that in another time. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you upstairs momentarily.
You can stop the recording. Thank you.